It's 5:30 once again here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, www.freakradio.org. My name's the V-Man. It's time for Rockin' the Boat. Today on the program, we're going to be discussing Plan Colombia and the impacts of the fumigation of coca crops that's been going on there since the U.S. Funded Plan Colombia began. Joining me on the phone will be Anna Cederstav. She is a staff scientist with Earth Justice. We're also going to be joined on the phone by an attorney, Astrid Puentes, who is currently working in public interest environmental law. And we're going to be discussing a recent Colombian court decision to suspend the spraying of the coca crops. So stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat coming up straight ahead here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Long before U.S. politicians declared a war on drugs, there was a civil war raging in Colombia. For the better part of the past quarter century, the U.S. government has been working with the Colombian government in an effort to eradicate illicit drug production. In July of 2000, Congress passed and President Bill Clinton signed a bill giving Colombia $1.6 billion in military aid. A variety of helicopters were delivered, and Colombian Army personnel were to be trained in the United States so that they could more effectively fight the drug traffickers. In January 2001, we learned that more than 65,000 acres out of an estimated 300,000 acres in Colombia had been dedicated to growing coca was being sprayed with glyphosate products, a Roundup-like product produced by Monsanto Corporation. Well, on June 25th of this year, a Colombian Superior Administrative Court ruled that the aerial spraying was a violation of the Colombian people's rights to a healthy environment and ordered the program suspended. The court also stipulated that the government must come into compliance with an environmental management plan for the eradication program and conduct a series of studies intended to protect human health and the environment. Joining me on the telephone to hash all this out is Dr. Anna Cederstav. She is a staff scientist with Earth Justice who works in tandem with the Inter-American Association for Environmental Defense. Also on the line is Astrid Puentes, an attorney from Colombia who is currently working in public interest environmental law, particularly with indigenous communities. She has been working to reverse the effects of Plan Colombia for about 3 years since its inception and for a number of years prior to Plan Colombia being passed. I want to thank you both for joining me on Rockin' the Boat.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with you, Astrid, and can you just give our listeners a brief description of the roots of the Colombian civil conflict and maybe a peek into the life of an average peasant farmer in the Colombian jungles?
Yes, sure. Well, the Colombian situation is rooted basically, I would say, in the social and economic injustice and differences that the country is living since 4 or 5 decades ago. The violence period has been in Colombia for 4 decades already. And in general, I would describe the situation of a layperson in Colombia as very difficult, even though people live like normal lives and they work and travel and try to have normal lives. But people in general is trapped in the violent situation that is in general caused by the three armed actors that Colombia has. That is, on one hand, the guerrillas, on the other, that are left-sided, on the other, the paramilitaries that are armed groups more right-sided, and then the Colombian army, which on behalf of the state is in plan enforcing the law in the country. So in general, peasants, indigenous people, and the layperson in the cities just want to live peacefully and work and enjoy their lives. But this has been really difficult because all the increase of the violence that the country is living. There are a lot of proposals to negotiate the peace from the social movement, but I would say that there is no really clear will from any party, any of the armed parties that I mentioned, to sign the peace and start the process.
Would you characterize Colombia as having a cocaine economy? I mean, we often hear about Colombian drug lords, and that's always been sort of this media hype in the United States. Maybe you can address that.
I won't describe the whole Colombian economy as a coca economy. It is dependent in some regions where coca is grown, as in the south of the country, and it was very dependent on coca in Cali and Medellin during the 90s. But now the country actually is going through a difficult economic situation also, but it has its own agricultural, industrial agency areas also. And the coca, basically the coca business, is affecting more human rights and the environment in general to the country, and it's not allowing people to work and to have a peaceful life.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can bring Anna Cederstav into the conversation. She works with the environmental group Earth Justice and also the Inter-American Association for Environmental Defense. As I mentioned in the intro, the chemical used in the Planned Columbia program is called glyphosate. It's produced by St. Louis-based Monsanto, commonly known as Roundup. But we were talking off-air, and you mentioned that the product used in Colombia is sort of enhanced. Maybe you could explain exactly what is being sprayed on these plants.
Well, the truth is that today we don't know exactly what is being sprayed. We had information last year on what was being sprayed, and at that time it was a formulated product of glyphosate. And as you mentioned, glyphosate is used in the United States, but the particular formulated product that they were using in Colombia was not, or has not been used in the United States, because it's a toxicity 1 classified pesticide, and it has impacts such as the label says that it causes irreversible eye damage. And so for obvious reasons, that has not been used commonly in the United States. But that product was being used for the spraying in Colombia. We were working to get EPA to pressure the State Department last year and supposedly succeeded in getting them to change the formulation so that now they're using a less toxic formulation of glyphosate. But we actually don't have any concrete indication that they have gone through with that change. Now, the second main difference, so regardless of whether they're spraying the old or the new stuff, and we have to hope that they're spraying the slightly less toxic stuff, the difference between the way it's applied has to do with concentration. There's a very, very high concentration that's being sprayed on the countryside in Colombia compared to sort of the 1% concentrations that you might be spraying here. So it's a question of doses, and it's a question of the method in which it's being applied. It's being applied on water bodies. It's being applied on legal crops. It's being applied in concentrations far greater than those used here. So it may not be so much an issue of the substance itself as the way it is being used.
Is there any truth to a growing body of supposed evidence that this stuff, in fact, targets not only coca and poppy and marijuana crops, but also all kinds of subsistence crops, like, you know, maybe coffee, for example, or some other kind of food crop that people may be growing?
Well, certainly there's significant evidence that food crops are being impacted. I just was looking yesterday at an interesting website. A colleague who just got back from Colombia a few weeks ago took hundreds of photos of areas that had been sprayed, and he was showing yuca crops, plantain crops, which is a form of banana. He had a bunch of palmitos, which I think is part of palm fields. And the issue is that they could be aiming, if they were using helicopters to spray the herbicide mixture, then they could actually be targeting a very specific field. But instead, they're using regular fixed-wing aircraft that have to fly at higher speeds. So it's very difficult for them to hit just a coca field. And so when they fly over, they hit the farmers that live nearby all of their legal crops. And of course, because glyphosate is such a strong herbicide and because it is being used in such high concentration, that pretty much means that all the food crops in the region, the food crops that are being sprayed, are dying, which leaves the farmers without any way to sustain themselves because they have no food. So there's certainly evidence that all of those food crops are being harmed.
And what about the impact on human health?
There are reports that both of the chemicals have issues as far as you get it on your skin, you get it on your eyes. And there are certainly reports that have been filed as to human health impacts. The difficulty is that these are such remote regions of Colombia that we can't, and because of the civil war, we haven't been able to send in teams that can do sort of an independent epidemiological assessment. And of course, the State Department says that all of the people that are filing complaints are narcotraficantes, meaning they're involved in the drug trade. Now, it's very difficult to believe that all of those complaints, because there are literally thousands of complaints, in combination with the pictures that we have and the reports from organizations such as Witness for Peace, would be false. But that is what the State Department claims, is that there are no true impacts of human health.
Hmm. In late February, the State Department, in fact, released findings that show that the cultivation of coca, the base material for cocaine, actually decreased last year, 2002. And maybe isn't this evidence that the glyphosate spraying is effective in wiping out the drug problem, you know, the supposed drug problem? And that's what we're our supposed enemy in Colombia is, right?
Well, it also, well,
I mean, that's one of the stated
enemies.
That is
certainly one of our stated enemies. It all depends on how you look at the data. The State Department, taking aerial photography and measuring which fields are and are not producing coca is a little bit difficult. And, of course, if you do a spraying campaign today and you go in 2 weeks later and you take photographs, you will see a lot of dead fields. And you can then document success. But the fact is that farmers have been recorded as going in and they just replant those fields. So if you have an intensive spraying campaign, which they did, and then immediately thereafter you take pictures, then you will get data that suggests that you're being very effective. But what you really need to look at is the long-term trends of what is happening, not just sort of a yearly snapshot, but really what is happening over a period of years. And the other thing that they need to look at, which they have not done entirely as well as they should have, is not just look at one specific region, but also see how the problem is spreading. Because if, for instance, they go in, which they have, and sprayed most of the region called Putumayo in the south, then the coca farmers are going to go ahead and they're going to move elsewhere. What does that mean? It means that they move into untouched forests, they cut down new forests, they move into other regions of Colombia. So if you look at the data, it used to be that coca growing was only occurring in a couple of sort of, I guess they're called states of Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's occurring in a much greater percentage of the country. And it's also occurring in much smaller plots, which are not as easy to measure. So the State Department claim is not necessarily as clear as it is made out to be by them.
In addition, I would also say that even though probably if we consider that the coca and poppy plants have decreased, that doesn't give the U.S. government or the Colombian government enough reasons to violate the human rights and to affect the environment and to affect the human health of the people. So that's one of the main issues that we are addressing, is the human rights violations with these programs.
That's the voice of Astrid Puentes, an environmental attorney, and she's also joined by Anna Cederstav of Earth Justice. She's a staff scientist there. And you're tuned to Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. My name's the V-Man. And I want to ask Astrid another question. As maybe you can talk about Colombia's government being the third largest recipient of U.S. aid, despite, as you're talking about, a mountain of evidence linking the military and the death squads to human rights violations. Can you explain maybe the strategic interests the United States has in the region and the alliance that we're seeing between Bush and Alvaro Uribe?
Colombia is a very important strategic country for the U.S., considering that it's in the north corner of the of South America, so it's the it is the entrance for the South America continent, and considering that it's also bordering the Panama, so it's very close to the Panama Canal, and not only because of the geographic position, but because the economic aspect also. Colombia is a very rich country. It's considered one of the mega diverse countries, so this means that it has a lot of biological diversity. In addition to that, it has a lot of oil also, and so this means that American companies, oil companies, are investing constantly in the country. So this has been one of the issues that has been related with this aspect. In addition to that, the Colombian new president is also very close to Bush president in political aspects, and he was the only South American president to support the war. So I would say that this, all these issues make them really close, politically speaking, and the economical interest of the U.S. in Colombia are also another issue that is very important to consider.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you could talk about the other, I mentioned one of the enemies being the war on drugs, but the other aspect to the Plan Colombia aid package, the $1.6 billion that the U.S. taxpayers fund, goes to fight a counterinsurgency war against the FARC rebels. And maybe you can address that issue as well.
Yes, at the beginning, actually, the U.S. Congress approved $1.5 billion, and at this point, with the addition funding that the Congress has approved, it is increased to $2.5 billion. And at the beginning, the Plan Colombia was only authorized to counter narcotic activities, and now they have authorized also to operate in the and get involved in the Colombian civil war, and this means to do operations against FARC, that is the guerrillas, as you said, because they are considered narco traffickers also because they're linked to the drug business. So at the end of the day, what we see is that Plan Colombia now, since even though at the beginning was seen as a strategy against the war on drugs, now it is a strategy to fight the Colombian civil war, which has a lot of social and economic aspects, as I mentioned at the beginning, that they are not going to be solved under the war.
Right. And maybe, Astrid, you could talk a bit about the decision that came down this week in the Colombian Superior Court and the significance of it, the fact that they said that the program should be suspended, and yet we're hearing statements from high-level administration officials that they're going to continue. Where is it going to go?
Well, I would start first saying that the importance of this decision is that it applies to the whole country. So it will suspend, in theory, all the fumigations around Colombia, and it was taken on the basis of the violation of human rights, specifically their right to a healthy environment, and because of the impact of the glyphosate to human health. So that's why the tribunal decided to suspend the fumigations. And one of the main arguments also was the application of the precautionary principle, because it was determined that the application of the fumigations implied or represent a very important and severe risk to human rights, to health and the environment. So these were the main arguments of the tribunal. But despite of this, the both the Colombian and the U.S. government have said that they are going to continue with the fumigations during the appeal process, because according to their statements, they already proved that the fumigations are not affecting the human health or the environment. So what they have said is that they're going to continue with these fumigations despite the risk to the human health and the environment, as the tribunal already decided. So that's the threat that now the human rights of the people that is being affected by the fumigations are facing in this moment.
And let me just interject how absurd this response by the two governments is. In the United States, certainly if the State Department here was ordered by a court to, because of the precautionary principle, suspend some activity, then they would have to do so until the next Court of Appeals decided that they were in the right. Or their other alternatives would be to seek a stay of an appeal, the stay of the injunction, which would mean that they would have to go to court and ask the injunction to be lifted during the appeals process. In Colombia, the United States and the Colombian executive branch are basically saying, we don't care what the court system has ordered us to do. We think we are right, and we're going to do it anyways. And that is just completely out of line.
And especially because the Colombian law also orders that whenever there is a decision as the one that the tribunal took this week, based on the precautionary principle, they have to also apply the order, and that will mean to suspend the fumigations until the appeal decide otherwise. So they are not only ignoring the decision that was taken this week, but also ignoring other administrative laws in Colombia.
And also, if maybe I can just jump in real quick and state also that if they do continue this, not only would they be in violation of this court order, but other international treaties that Colombia is signatory to. Am I wrong in that assumption?
No, you're right. They are also violating with this the United Nations Convention on the fight to narcotraffic, because in that convention, the United Nations agreed to eradicate the illicit crops, but with measures that do not affect the human health, the health or the environment, and traditional rights as indigenous peoples. So they are violating that convention, and that one, among others, as the International Labor Organization 169 convention, that determines that the governments have to do previous consultations to the indigenous peoples or Afro-descendant peoples in case that they apply any action that can affect these minorities. Mm-hmm. And other environmental treaties, as the Convention on Biological Diversity, for example, because it was clear from this tribunal decision that they are affecting and contaminating the environment in where they are fumigating.
You're tuned to Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm joined by Astrid Puentes. You just heard her speaking. She is an environmental attorney. And we're also joined by Anna Cederstaff, a PhD and staff scientist with Earth Justice. We have about 5 minutes or so left, and I have a couple things I want to get to quickly. First of which is oil, and then maybe some solutions to all this. Briefly, oil was mentioned. Colombia is the seventh largest supplier of oil to the U.S., and Occidental Petroleum has been doing some exploratory drilling on the Uwa people's ancestral lands in the cloud forests. They pulled out, maybe 6-8 months ago, they pulled out after finding no oil, but others are interested in other exploration projects. What can you tell us about the oil production in Colombia and the ties that it may have to the aid program that we know as Plan Colombia?
That is actually one of the issues that the indigenous peoples have tried to raise also, because when you check the map of Colombia, it is very close. The new areas in which the petrol oil explorations are going to be carried out are overlapped to where the indigenous territories are located. So one of the issues that they have been trying to address is that all of the Plan Colombia and the fumigations in general, in addition to the increase of the violence, is a strategy to displace these people from this area in order to be able to explore and exploit the oil in these in general in the Amazon basin. And one of the issues that it's important to mention also is that under the Plan Colombia, the U.S. Congress authorized $7 million to protect the Occidental Pipeline that is located in a region in the northeast of the country where there are no illicit crops. So that's another important evidence that make us think about the link between the oil and the Plan Colombia strategy.
And Anna Sederstoff, maybe you can give us your ideas of what some solutions are to the drug problem from a scientific perspective. I mean, here we have a burgeoning prison population in this country as a result of drug consumption, and we have the health impacts of the herbicide spraying happening in Colombia and in other parts of the world. Maybe you could address that.
Well, obviously, this is a very complex problem. Personally, I believe, and it's interesting to note that there are actually a few State Department officials in Colombia who, off the record, have said the same thing, that the only way that you, in the long run, are going to solve this problem, and the problem being crime associated with the drug trafficking and of course, drug use in the United States, is by taking a step towards possibly legalizing some of this drug use and thus controlling it, having it be administered by sort of state health authorities, and bringing down the price of the drugs. Because even if you do the math, if I don't know the prices of drugs, but say that a kilo sells for $10,000 on the U.S. market, but a Colombian peasant is being paid $2 for that kilo. If you now make that Colombian peasant have to work much harder to produce 1 kilo of coca, and thus you make him earn $10 or maybe even $100 for the 1 kilo of coca, you're still going to be making an immense profit once you're bringing it into the United States. So the only way to stop the drug problem and stop the drug trade is to control the market and to control the price in the United States. That would be my personal stance, but again, it's a very complex problem. I don't think there are any easy solutions, and I think that in Colombia, what they need to do is they need to do alternative development and really give the people in the countryside an alternative way of surviving. These people are growing crops because there's nothing else that can get them their daily food, and alternative development projects such as those carried out in many countries by USAID are a very good step on the road to getting people to go into legitimate endeavors rather than growing illicit crops.
Well, we have just about 1 minute left, and I'd like to give you each a 1 moment for a last word. And since we started with Astrid, why don't we end with Anna? So, Astrid, why don't you give us quickly what you think people should do here to affect change in Colombia?
I definitely will encourage every person here in the U.S. to write to their U.S. Senate representatives and express their ideas and their support to the human rights protection in Colombia against the eradication strategy.
And Anna Sederstoff of Earth Justice.
I would say that there should be significant public pressure on the government to exercise greater control on the State Department and on the executive branch and really look into what we are doing, not only in Colombia, but in a lot of foreign countries, and the impact that our policies are having on very poor and destitute people living abroad.
All right. I've been joined by Astrid Puentes, an environmental attorney working to stop the effects of Plan Colombia, and Anna Sederstoff, a staff scientist with Earth Justice. Check out their website, www.earthjustice.org. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night. And that's going to wrap it up here for us. We are fresh out of time here at Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. Join me Monday at 5:30 for another edition of Rockin' the Boat. Stay tuned. Start a war.
Down in Colombia, 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 they're gonna start a war.